All right, welcome to the West Report live stream with lawyer Chris Sidoti. And we're going to talk about the president of Israel's pending visit, his looming visit, that's Isaac Herzog. It's a very controversial visit. And Chris, who, and we'll just title him as a prominent Australian international human rights lawyer, advocate and expert in national human rights institutions. He is currently a commissioner on the UN Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the occupied Palestine territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel. Welcome, Chris. You say that there is legal scope and perhaps a moral duty to arrest Isaac Herzog on arrival in Australia. Can you tell us why and on what grounds?
Yes, Michael. Legal scope and moral duty, both. The law is not beyond doubt, I have to say. In the past, it's been traditional that heads of state have immunity, head of state immunity, when travelling to foreign countries. But that old principle is being gradually broken down. And it's now argued by many international lawyers that head of state immunity doesn't apply to what are called atrocity crimes, that is, genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Our Commission of Inquiry has found that Herzog, the President of Israel, is responsible for incitement to genocide, which is one of these atrocity crimes. And so, in my view, head of state immunity doesn't apply to Herzog when he is visiting Australia because of this conclusion from the Commission that he is responsible for incitement to genocide. That means he should be arrested, he should be investigated. If there is evidence sufficient for prosecution, he should be prosecuted. Now, I would see that as a legal duty, but also as an ethical duty. Herzog is coming here, having made these incendiary statements himself, but also coming here as head of state, of a rogue state. The Commission of Inquiry has been found by the International Court of Justice to be responsible for the unlawful occupation of Palestine, unlawful settlements in Palestine. The Israeli leadership has been found by the International Criminal Court to be subject to arrest and trial for crimes against humanity and war crimes. There is a genocide case against Israel before the International Court of Justice. There is plenty of evidence to say that the head of state of Israel, a rogue state, should not be welcome as a visitor to this country. So both on law and on ethics, I would argue that he should not be coming here. He should not have been invited. The invitation should be withdrawn. And if he comes, he should be arrested and investigated.
So he will be investigated under the Australian Criminal Code. Is that correct?
Both under the Australian Criminal Code and under international law. We do have provisions in our Criminal Code covering the crime of incitement to genocide. So it's an Australian crime. It's not just an international crime, but in the same way, it's a crime under international law. So the investigation can proceed under both bodies of law.
So some people are saying on social media that there's no grounds because of what you've mentioned, Chris, which is the fact that he's a ceremonial head of state rather than that it's not an executive position and therefore there's no grounds. But of course, we've all seen the horrors of Gaza and the West Bank, but particularly Gaza, unfold. And as yet, the International Court of Justice, these remain allegations, the genocide allegations. So they can always claim allegations, even though the evidence would seem to be the most overwhelming that anybody has ever seen, just to the naked, non-lawyerly eye. But what would you say are the main grounds that you have seen, the actual actions, apart from being the head of the rogue state? What are some of the things that Herzog has done which would be brought into evidence were he to be arrested and investigated?
The fact that he is ceremonial head of state only does not resolve every issue. It does resolve many issues. The powers of the Israeli president are similar to those of our own Governor General, broader but similar. And that means that the president of Israel does not have any role in the political or military chain of command. For that reason, because he's a ceremonial head of state, because he's not part of the political and military leadership, our commission has not found that he is responsible for war crimes or crimes against humanity. So that is one part of the story. But the other part of the story is what he has done personally. And that's where the question of incitement to genocide arises. He has made statements in which he has held the entire nation, was the phrase he used, Palestinians in Gaza, responsible for the crimes committed by Hamas in southern Israel on 7 October 2023. The entire nation was his expression. And in the context of the debates going on in Israel, that longer statement that he made, in our view, constituted incitement to genocide. Now, the fact that he's a ceremonial head of state does not excuse him from actions that he personally is responsible for and words which he personally has spoken. So in some senses, it's a furphy. It's a distraction to say that he's a ceremonial head of state and that absolves him of all responsibility. It does of some, but he is responsible for what he personally says and does.
Is there any historical precedent for this kind of action?
There certainly is historical precedent, particularly in the context of the International Criminal Court. The one case that I would refer to there is the case of the former president of Sudan, who was subject to an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court. He travelled to South Africa in his capacity as head of state, and while he was in South Africa, the South African government was not willing to arrest him, but action was taken in the South African courts, and the South African courts ordered that the South African government arrest him if he was within the jurisdiction and subject to the warrant of the International Criminal Court. Now, he got out of the country before he was arrested, but there was a clear ruling by the court in that case that even though he was the head of state of Sudan, he was subject to arrest. There are differences in relation to Herzog. So far as we are aware, he is not subject to an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court. He may be. I say so far as we are aware, because there's been no public statement from the court, but we do know that the court has issued warrants in relation to Netanyahu and Gallant, the former defence minister, and we do know that the court is continuing its investigations. We don't know whether further warrants have been issued. So he may be subject to an arrest warrant from the ICC. And if that's the case, the Australian government has a legal obligation to arrest him as soon as he sets foot in this country. But if there is no arrest warrant, then it's an obligation, in my view, under international law, customary international law nonetheless, and a requirement to enforce the Australian Crimes Act.
So this subject of intent, which is absolutely intricate to the Geneva Convention and to international law, you're saying that Herzog has breached this because of his public statements saying that all people in Gaza should be subject to the same treatment, should be, I'm not sure of the exact words he used.
The entire nation is responsible, is what he said.
The entire nation is responsible, and we know on the very low figures so far that the conservative figures by the Hamas health ministry that 70,000 and a bit have been killed on their figures, that's bodies recovered. And we know that
bodies recovered and identified, Michael. But also last Thursday, the Israeli military admitted that they accepted the Hamas figures as the minimum death toll.
Now, which means it's far higher, that there's many more bodies buried under the rubble, which means that Francesca Albanese is positing figures as high as 680,000 and so on, given the immensity of the destruction there. And now that the IDF has admitted, Chris, that these figures are probably correct, because this was part of their PR platform for some time, that they just said, well, they're Hamas figures, so they can't be trusted. Yeah. Now they're saying we trust them. So do you think that that's an indication, a good indication the figures are far higher? What do you think that they are?
I wouldn't even put a guess on it, but yes, they are far higher, Michael. It's the identified bodies at this stage number almost 75,000. It's estimated that there are at least 100,000 buried under the rubble. There are also bodies that have been buried that were not identified or were not taken to the hospital or the morgue for identification, but were simply buried by their families. We have no idea how many of those there are. And then there are secondary deaths. These are just the deaths here that we're talking about that are the direct result of violence. There are other deaths, large numbers, that are indirectly related. So the deaths from malnutrition, from starvation, preventable deaths due to disease, whether you're talking about people who could not get dialysis, for example, with kidneys, went into kidney failure and died, those who could not get cancer treatment, those who had heart conditions that were unable to be treated, even with simple processes like stenting. So the number of preventable deaths that have occurred is also unknown. So when we say at least 75,000, we can be absolutely certain, in my view, that that figure is the bare minimum of the number of deaths from violence and does not take account of consequential deaths or preventable deaths that have occurred.
And so, Chris, the ceasefire. Now, just from a legal perspective, what you can see, they said there's a ceasefire in October. And since the ceasefire, of course, we've seen live footage of them actually bombing from the skies, people in tents. And so that would appear to be very genocidal, certainly not it's not showing much discretion, just bombing people from the skies. So, you know, 500 people is the number, I think, conservatively, which has been put on that death toll since the ceasefire. So what kind of ceasefire is it? I mean, the authorities and the Americans and Israelis claim that the ceasefire is holding, that they're doing the right thing. Of course, their credibility is looking thinner than ever. But what legally can we call this a ceasefire?
No, it's not a ceasefire. The most accurate description for it is reduced fire. The fire has reduced. The death toll, the daily death toll, has reduced. Since the reduced fire began, the average daily death toll of Palestinians is around about 5 persons per day. But there were 30 killed on Friday, 30. So some days it's very high, other days it's lower. But it's an average of around 5 people per day since the reduced fire began, which is about the same as the number of civilians killed each day in Ukraine, where there is no ceasefire or reduced fire at all. So we're talking about
so
here.
It's accurate to say,
sorry,
it's I'm... accurate to say then that Australia has invited this guy who's potentially legally responsible for the genocide, while the genocide is still persisting. We've invited him to Australia on a tour. Is that correct?
I think that's an accurate description.
I mean, how would this happen in practice? Would they just turn up at the airport, cuff the guy, and then start investigating?
Well, they can turn up at the airport, firstly, and turn him around. We now have very strong provisions in our migration law for the Minister for Home Affairs to refuse entry or to remove visas from people who don't meet the character test. And this guy doesn't meet the character test, no matter how you put it. So the first thing is, why is he being allowed to come? But the second thing is, yes, he should be met by the Australian Federal Police. He should be taken into custody for the purposes of interrogation. And if there is evidence sufficient to warrant a prosecution, he should be prosecuted. Now, I'm not saying that he's guilty. I'm not prejudging that. I am saying that our commission found conclusive evidence, but that's not the test of beyond reasonable doubt, and we didn't subject him to a trial. So I'm not saying that he's guilty, but I am saying that there is sufficient evidence to warrant prosecution, and a court should decide guilt or innocence.
Now, this is slightly off topic, because the anticipation is running hot by all the people that oppose Israel's genocide in Australia. And we saw the numbers that they got on the Sydney Harbour Bridge march. And now Chris Minns, the Premier of New South Wales, he has extended his protest ban. There are lawyers now on social media saying, anybody arrested for protest, we're going to give you pro bono legal representation. So there's a huge groundswell of action behind this, an antipathy towards Herzog's visit. What would the legal position? I know you probably haven't had a chance to look at the actual minutiae of these regulations or these laws, but in your opinion, I mean, people, if they just turn up as interested bystanders and they're just there, presumably they can't be arrested. I mean, how are the authorities going to combat this situation if they don't arrest Herzog and if there are mass protests?
There will be mass protests. The laws that have been passed in the last few weeks are voluminous, and you're right, I haven't gone through the minutiae of those laws. My understanding is that the New South Wales laws do not prohibit assemblies, but do prohibit marches. And so people who are attending an assembly, say in Town Hall Square or Hyde Park, are probably not acting unlawfully. Although I say probably because if some others act unlawfully, it may well be that there are arguments about making a common cause to breach the law. But certainly it is clear under New South Wales law that, as soon as they start marching, if they're blocking roads or blocking or obstructing traffic, then it becomes a matter of unlawfulness under the New South Wales law as it now stands. Now, as you say, there are arguments about whether that's constitutional or not. It's going to be quite some time before we know what the law really is, what it really stands to be, and it's going to take court interpretations and decisions to determine that.
But on the face of it, if you turn up to show that you don't like, because you don't like genocide and you don't like what's going on, if you turn up just as an interested observer and you're just there with your drink bottle and your T-shirt, you're okay. There's no legal basis to be arrested. Is that correct?
You're on the face of it, is the qualification I would put on it. On the face of it, you're okay if you attend a rally or an assembly that does not obstruct traffic and is not violent. So if you're in a park or a square or an area where there is no obstruction.
Have you got any observations, Chris, as to why Albo did this? I mean, you know, obviously he appears to have been wedged by one of the Israel lobbies by, you know, being invited. And because he's a head of state, then Albo said to the Governor General, would you mind sending this guy a formal state invite? And that appears to be what's happened here. And it appears to be a, you know, Herculean error of judgment. But, I mean, could it be that, do you think, that there's something else behind it, that Albanese wants to gauge the level of public antipathy to that, and that will gird his loins to actually have a stronger foreign policy and stronger response to what is going on?
I think, Michael, that's a little bit complicated. I try to look for simple explanations for things. Certainly, it was a crazy decision. But the decision was made a few days after the Hanukkah massacre at Bondi Beach. It was a time of enormously traumatic stress, certainly on the Australian Jewish community, but on all other Australians as well, and on our political leaders. I think the Prime Minister, who was a fundamentally decent person, was traumatised, like we all were, by what had happened on the 14th of December. And somehow or other, he got it into his head that this was a good invitation to issue without thinking through the issues. Now, one thing about Anthony Albanese is that he has shown the capacity to realise when he makes mistakes and to change course. We saw that in relation to the Royal Commission. Well, this is a monumentally crazy mistake, and he needs to change course. He needs to withdraw the information, the invitation now. It's not yet too late, and stop this from happening. Or
does he have any legal liability, or the government have any legal liability for this decision in the future?
I really haven't even started to think that through. Whether there is any legal obligations under international law, you better leave that one with me. I wouldn't like to speculate on that without thinking it through.
Well, I think we've covered most of the issues here. I mean, that you're saying that there are grounds to arrest Herzog, and he should be, and there's a moral case as well as a legal case. And so, look, that's fantastic. We're going to leave the press release up for people to see, and we're going to send this over all platforms. But before we go, I might just say you've been doing some town halls with some other international law experts, and I just want to quickly let everybody know what those are. And Josh, if you could put them up, that'd be fantastic. So Chris is doing a national tour. Chris Sidotti is doing a national tour being run in April, featuring himself, Professor Emily Crawford, talking about international law and the genocide in Palestine. There's a lecture coming up on Thursday, March the 12th at the Harold Lobb Concert Hall in Moloombimba, which is in Newcastle. Professor Crawford, Emily Crawford, will also be considering some aspects of the ICJ's judgment on the environment. And in addition to sponsorship from the International Commission of Jurists, Amnesty International and the ANU Law School, we have local sponsorship from the Newcastle Institute. So we're going to leave you with the details there. Chris, can I thank you personally, and I'm guessing that the Australian public will thank you too for providing this very clear and strong view on what appears to be a disastrous mistake by the government in inviting Isaac Herzog, the President of Israel, to Australia. Thanks so much for joining us, and listeners will have the details of the roadshow with them coming up. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Michael, for having me again, and anytime, happy to come back.